All right, so we'll just continue where we left off. And the next speaker card I have is for Paul Chapman from Campbell Timberland. Is Paul here? Hi, Paul. Following Paul will be Gary Rainierson.
Paul Chapman, Campbell Timberland Management. And I apologize for my voice. I woke up this morning and seemed to have lost it. So that may be a good thing for you guys. I did submit some written comments, and I did it mainly because of two items. One is the responses to the our previous comments weren't available until about a couple of weeks ago, and so I wanted to respond to some of them. And that was probably the main reason right there, so I'll just leave it at that. I do have some additional copies of what I handed out. I don't know if you'd want them or not. I don't know how much I'm going to cover on this because of my voice. So.
Okay. Yeah, you can hand them maybe to Gene or Luis is fine.
Thanks. They're just copies of what I had already given.
Okay. So. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairman and board members, for the opportunity to comment today. Of what I handed out, there's mainly about, I think, about three items that I'd just like to address. One is that, first, I've talked to you before, and just to reiterate that I manage about 6,000, a little over 6,000 acres that end up lying in within the Klamath Basin. The two watersheds that I manage in, that we have lands that we manage, Antelope Creek and Butte Creek, there is no least subsurface flow into the Klamath River. So obviously, you know, for our purposes, we would have really liked to have those removed, but in lieu of that, one of the things on in section 1.1 on page 1.1-1 of the TMDL at the bottom of the page, there's a footnote that defines the watershed and basin, and it would be grateful if that, well, it would be great if that included that not all the waters or the watersheds that are within this basin plan end up going to the Pacific. Just like I said, both Antelope Creek and Butte Creek end up flowing into a sink, which is included in what I had sent to in the written comments on the draft. You can see that brighter green is the Butte Creek sub-basin, or Butte sub-basin, and then the two creeks that show on there are Butte Creek and Antelope Creek, and they end up just flowing in. So for future purposes, some of us, when this plan is being implemented, it should, you know, we're looking at it being around for a while. Different people come into different positions, not the same ones that, you know, initially started the discussion. It'd be great to have it clarified that not all the watersheds flow into the Pacific. And it'd be great, even greater, if they could list which ones, so in the future, if I ever have a item of discussion, you can say, look, it even states it in the TMDL or the plan. Before I go on, actually, I want to thank the staff for all the work that they put in here and even some of the latest changes. Some of those latest changes have, and that's another reason why I presented some written testimony, some of those latest changes have led to some questions or some comments that I have. One of the items is that on section 6.5.7.6, which deal with forestry issues. They talk about foresters proposing to reduce effective shade on watercourses to prevent recovery of site potential shade must justify such proposals in light of water quality objective for temperature. Oh, thank you. And part of besides what we think that there's already enough rules and regulations that cover temperature and sedimentation, there is no indication of what criteria constitutes justification for us. So right now it seems that we're at the mercy of staff judgment, and it'd be nice to have at least some criteria there that tells us what we would need to do or what do they deem as examples of justification, which brings a point that, you know, currently There is already a lot of processes in the forestry aspect for managing water quality, especially temperature and sediment. These include use of WDRs, conditional waivers of WDRs, the THP PHI process, and the input that the board has there, and fines, and then finally, if that still comes to a problem and there's a problem that occurs, they still have the authority to do fines and penalties on us if we violate any of the rules. So therefore, we're coming from the fact that the current forest practice regulations, including the recent ASPs where they apply on anadromous watersheds, are sufficient to support the goals of the Klamath River, Klamath TMDL. One of the other items is in Chapter 10, the economic analysis. Table 10.5 states that all potential restrictions above the forest practice that this plan allows is achieved according to staff judgment without any additional cost to timber operators. The way it's worded right now is that they're using the forest practice rules as a base, but they can require more. And one of the examples they use for requiring more is on the Class 2 standards. The staff does not think that those are adequate at this time. If they don't think it's adequate, then I think they need to put that in the economic analysis. And that would be, any time you take away land or trees that you cannot harvest, that does have an economic impact to my company and others. And then finally, just one thing which, having come from Oregon recently back to California, I'm familiar with the Oregon practice rules, and I'm actually familiar with, I've been involved in an Oregon TMDL too, which was Lobster Creek there on the Rogue River. But there's discussion throughout the document about cooperating and working in conjunction with Oregon. Yet everything I've seen so far, the Oregon, they are not doing any more than what their standard forest practice rules are, which, are even less than ours here in California. So, again, I want to appreciate the work that the staff has put in. This is a monumental undertaking. It's something I wouldn't want to take on. And I thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thanks, Paul. Mr. Anderson, followed by Jay Wright.
Chairman Hales, members of the board and staff, thank you for the opportunity to comment. I'm Gary Reinerson, here representing Green Diamond Resource Company. First, I'd like to thank the staff for the recognition of the Green Diamond Aquatic Habitat Conservation Plan and the sediment measures that are incorporated in our plan that are also identified and discussed briefly in Chapter 5 at Section 6.5.5.4. So we appreciate that and look forward to working with the staff on implementing our HCP standards to meet those sediment requirements. We expect to have our WDR for our road management plan completed and before you in June. A correction, it's page chapter 6, page 43. It says April, and I'd recommend you make a change to June. This is being done in coordination with the Department of Fish and Game, and we're moving the process along as quickly as we can. So we hopefully we'll be in front of you with June with that permit. We also appreciate the recognition of the letter that we submitted on February 9th and the testimony I provided to you at the WIREKA meeting on January 27th, requesting consistency with our habitat conservation plan standards for meeting the temperature requirements of the Klamath TMDL. Reading in responses, I think it's back in the 900 pages someplace, the staff response was that they'd be developing a letter and replying to our request for that, and we look forward to receiving that letter and working with staff on those issues. Also, there's one recommended change I would like to make in on the new Chapter 4, the implementation plans. At the bottom of page 4-2, there was a change where excess or controllable settlements have been crossed out in this chapter and in other places in the document and replaced with the term excess sediment. And where at the bottom of page 4-2, it defines excess sediment and doesn't specifically relate that excess sediment to anthropomorphic causes. What I'd suggest is that the definition for excess sediment state, excess sediment is defined herein as anthropomorphically caused, and then go on soil, sand, silt, clay, et cetera. Because elsewhere, where the word controllable is stricken and the word excess is implemented, there's no modifier that says anthropomorphic associated with it. So given where we have lots of natural landslides in the Klamath, this could be interpreted to mean that when those landslides occurred on our property that would not normally be considered controllable certainly would fall into the definition of excess sediment. So I'd appreciate the consideration of that change to in the definition of excess sediment to further define that. Thank you.
Thanks. Jay Wright, followed by Erica Terrence.
Good afternoon, Chairman and Board. Thank you for your opportunity to present today. My name is Jay Wright. I'm representing myself. I'm from Arcata, California. So I'd like to request that within 1 year, Board directs staff to evaluate and inventory all the cold water refugia protection zones for effectiveness monitoring of the thermal refugia protection regulations. And within 1 year, the board will require staff to make an appraisal to determine if the Scott and Shasta TMDO plans are improving the water quality and quantity in the Klamath, and make revisions to the Scott and Shasta TMDLs as necessary to meet water quality targets in the Klamath. I'd like to see that the board follow the farm and ranch model that was provided in the Garcia River TMDL to address agricultural non-point source water pollution load reductions. Recently, I attended the Salmonid Restoration Federation conference in Reading, and as part of that, I participated in the Shasta River tour. And what I observed up there was we went to the Nature Conservancy lands that are adjacent to the Big River Springs complex. It's a tremendously important source of cold water refugia. And the actions that the Nature Conservancy are taking are very simple, but they have resulted in incredible change in just 1 year. They have basically, the real action they've taken within their first year is cattle exclusion. And that simple action has resulted in clean, clear, cold water. They've documented a very... I would characterize it as a remarkable reduction in thermal refugia or improvement in thermal refugia at the confluence with the Shasta, and that is going to reap huge benefits for returning coho and other salmonid species in that thermal refugia. So I just want to make that point because very small actions can result in dramatic changes if we do it right. So I'd like to see that the Scott and Shasta ag waivers get rolled into the new Klamath waiver. Want to require restoration of riparian areas by fencing and cattle exclusion. And that ensure that the diverse group of participants in developing the ag waiver include tribes and environmental NGOs, and impose immediate pollution reduction requirements on irrigators in the interim period, not recommendations. Regarding the suction dredge mining issue, I'd like to see the board require that those suction dredge mining permits be required as point source NPDES polluters, and that they should be regulated in all areas and all seasons, not just those designated in the Thermal Refugee Protection Plan. Thank you.
Thanks.
Erica Terrence? And Erica, did you want to speak by yourself, or we've got this other group of speaker cards with all Riverkeeper and Yurok associated, so I was looking to you for how your group was going to speak.
Thanks. I appreciate that. My name is Erica Terrence. I am a Klamath Riverkeeper, and certainly there are many of us, as you note, associated with Klamath Riverkeeper and working on these same issues with the same goals. I think for myself, I'd like to give my own testimony, but I know that there's a group of folks from Klamath who are interested in speaking as a group. That doesn't mean that one person will testify. It means they all will have a short piece to say. But they can.
However, I've got this, you know, five or six speaker cards, and everybody has listed the same affiliation, so it's either the opportunity to come up together or they can come up individually.
Okay. So I think they can let you know when we
sure,
get to that point.
Fine.
But I'll be giving my own testimony, so thanks. Again, my name is Erica Terrence. I'm with Klamath Riverkeeper. We're a nonprofit organization based in Orleans, California. We also have an Oregon office. So members of the board and tireless water board staff, thank you for all your hard work on this for such a long time. I want to make a few general comments. The first one is that I was listening to the radio on my drive out here yesterday and heard about a report recently released that says that more people die from water pollution around the world each year than die from war. So to me, that highlights how important it is what you do. And it emphasizes a point that I think we see here in the Klamath, which is that people are dying. You may not see the dead body right away or have the body count handy, but cumulatively speaking, we're suffering huge impacts and lethal impacts to our fisheries, our cultures, our economies, our ability to subsist off of fisheries. Many of Klamath Riverkeeper's members represent the most severely impacted beneficial use categories listed in the latest version of the TMDL action plan, and I speak primarily with them in mind today. Many of them are here and can speak for themselves as well. As a specific note, it was good to see Ulacan added to the list of endangered fisheries to be considered and protected. So it's obvious to me, whether you base it on the data and scientific modeling that your staff has done, or you base it on empirical observation, for instance, I don't want to swim in the Klamath, the Klamath River needs pollution limits and permits that reflect those limits, and those permits should regulate to the finest possible filter. So the TMDL that you all are considering for adoption at this meeting is an important step towards cleaner water for us. Every meeting where we discuss these TMDLs, you hear from some people that these pollution rules would limit their freedom and impose an unfair economic burden on their way of life. Every time I hear these types of comments, I feel obligated to remind you that you are a body of regulators charged with compliance with the Clean Water Act. What's more, many ways of life have already suffered disproportionate burdens over the past decades, precisely because of the unregulated water pollution we are legally required to regulate under the Clean Water Act. So I'm here simply to ask that you do your job today and on into the future by adopting, implementing, and enforcing the strongest possible pollution limits to achieve the highest possible water quality in the Klamath River. And I would echo what Ms. Quorum said earlier. I think technically this is a very sound TMDL. And all things considered, I'd urge you to adopt it, and I'll make a few specific comments about changes I'd recommend. So more specifically, we at Klamath Riverkeeper are pleased to see that this period during which thermal refugia protective buffers will apply was extended to include the spring months. We think that's biologically called for and appropriate, certainly. However, we would even go so far as to state that it should cover the whole year, and we think that's also biologically appropriate. We were, however, disappointed to find that the TMDL still, in spite of our previous comments and comments submitted by various tribes pre-decisionally would use the Thermal Refugia Protection Policy to shield suction dredgers from NPDES permit requirements if dredges are at some point deemed point source pollution sources. Besides being pre-decisional in nature, the decision to leave this part of the TMDL intact is worrisome and we think might be illegal because point sources can't simply be regulated sometimes and not others. This strikes me as sort of arbitrary and capricious, honestly. Also, dredging could certainly harm fish or fish habitat or water quality outside of designated cold water refugia protection zones or time periods. And while thermal refugia protection is an innovative way to protect cold water fisheries, and we applaud the staff that's done so much hard work to map that out, it could still allow for dredges to impair water quality beyond acceptable limits. So my specific recommendation today is please strike all references to dredges as potential point sources and subsequent exemption from NPDES permitting requirements. Specifically, please strike section 6.5.4.5 and the corresponding part of the action plan, which is on page 4-11.00, and it's section 2E. One last thing I want to touch on today. You may have heard that in the Scott and Shasta rivers, we have really bleak coho salmon counts, and really, frankly, not very strong Chinook counts even up there anymore. And those should be strong salmon-producing rivers. Those should be strong fisheries-producing rivers. In the Shasta last year, Department of Fish and Game video fish counting showed that 9 coho all male returned to the Shasta River. What that means, and Fish and Game has confirmed this in a recent report, is that 2 out of 3 cohorts of coho in the Shasta are functionally extinct. So we are like out of time to fix the problem there for coho, and that's a cold water fishery beneficial use. So coho are on the brink of extinction there. 2 out of 3 year classes are functionally extinct. In my conversations with Crystal Bowman, and I know you mentioned you had some as well, she said she's losing faith in the TMDL process, having watched the Scott TMDL and the Shasta TMDL not meet their own compliance schedules or compliance at all. And so with that in mind, I think, you know, if we're going to have an ag waiver, it certainly should roll the Scott and Shasta in, but it needs to be a really strong ag waiver to deal with a problem like 9 coho coming back to the Shasta. And it needs to be bringing parties into compliance pretty darn quickly. So I just put that in your minds in terms of implementation. We certainly look forward to participating in that inclusive stakeholder group, and we think that we're going to need something in the interim that's required, not just recommended. That being said, I think you've heard a lot from me already in past parts of this process, and I would urge you to make the changes that I recommended about suction dredging and then adopt the newly amended TMDL today or tomorrow. And thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so my next set of cards I have a group of people from Yurok and Klamath Riverkeeper. And I've got Amber Jensaw and Sam Jensaw, Crystal Sternberg, and Georgiana Myers. And I don't know if you guys would like to talk individually or...
No,
okay.
We'll just come together. We'll
okay. And if you could each all just state your name beforehand, that would be great. Thank you.
Aikwe Neknow Georgiana Myers, Mewamechak Shregon, Putakla Wenchucks. Myers said, hello, my name is Georgiana, and I come from Shregon. That is 23 miles from the mouth of the river heading upriver. First of all, I'd like to say I'm here to stand behind and support the proposed TMDL for the Klamath River. I think a lot of parts of it is really good and will do a huge change for restoration for our river, making it colder, making it cleaner, and maybe hopefully and sometime soon we'll be able to swim in our river. We'll be able to fish without getting rashes. We'll be able to catch fish that aren't have lesions on them, their gills aren't white, and they're not sick. So that is our hope. I brought today with me some young people, and I know that's relative. I'm 26, so I know I'm still considered young, because this is an issue that, you know, our parents and grandparents fought before us to be able to fish. And now we, this generation, are fighting just to have fish at all, just to have a river at all. So some of the things I'd like to say is that, for one, I come from the Klamath Justice Coalition. That's the group that has been actively in support of undamming the Klamath. But regardless of whether the Klamath River is undammed or not, the water still needs to be clean, and it needs to be cold, and it needs to be a place where we can find refuge and not be a place that's scary, not be a place that's dangerous. As it is stands now, that's the case. I live now in the estuary part of the river, so when I see the river, I see a different side. But when I go home to Shragon or to Panomnik in Orleans, you see something very different. You see a small river. You see it dying. You see the people around us dying. To us, fish aren't arbitrary. They're something that we have to have. It's a part of our diet. It's traditional. We smoke it. We eat it. We celebrate with it. It's something that we're thankful for. It's a big tribal celebration. Fishing is something that is in every Yurok's blood, and we all do it. And we can't live without it, and we need it, and we need clean, cold water for that. And I applaud you, and I hope that this TMDL goes through with some of the recommendations that Erica mentioned would be great. But I support it, and I hope that it goes through. Thank you.
I agree, Nick, now, Sammy Jensa, Waganoi, Slam and Salmon, Rekwoy, Mimet Maret Chok, Next Scare Walk, Murray Waiton, SC, School Pa. Hi, my name is Sammy Jensa. I come from the mouth of the Klamath River. People call me Slam and Salmon around there. And I like pretty women in clean water. What I'd like to start off with is a quote by Leonardo da Vinci. He said that this earth is our body and the rivers are our veins. And to the Yurok people, it's much like that. This river is our artery. It's our mainline to our heart. Without this river, our culture would die. And we're not, us as individuals, we're not representing ourselves. We're representing families, different parts of the river, different villages. And I really appreciate the work so far that has been done, and I thank you guys. And I just want to let you know that it is in your hands and the hands of the KBRA and the KHSA. And this is a modern terms of fighting for our river. This is what we have to do now. And this is what we have to do to preserve our way of life. Walk well. Thank you.
I have Queen Neck now, Crystal. Cop Ayok, Wage Peck Mumechok. I said, hello, my name is Crystal Sternberg. I live in Crescent City, California, and my family comes from Wichpec. And like they said, the river and everything is our culture. We really need it and need it to be clean and all that. I don't know.
Scooyanic Choice, Neck Now Amber. Good afternoon, my name's Amber. I'd like to say that the river is our main source. It's like our lifeline. And the lesser that our river is healthy, the harder it makes it on us as individuals and as Yuroks and as cultural people to do pretty much everything that we do, because everything revolves around our culture. And so when it comes to our river, it's really important for us. It's not just, let's just go fishing for fun. It's, let's go fishing for our family so we can supply our family. Let's go fishing for our elders who can't fish anymore. Let's go fishing to help people. So our river is really important. And with all the different things out there, like the dredging, it's really unhealthy for our fish and all of everything. Because in the dredge, not only does it sit in the bottom, but what a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of our little fish that need to grow up, and our little and the eels, they all stay in the where exactly where the dredging is, and that's perfect sediment for them to be in. Yeah, of course. But the thing about that is, when the dredging goes through, it eats them up, and they don't get to respawn. They don't get to grow up. They don't get to supply the Yurok cultures with culture and life and everything else to flourish. And even though it benefits people in the short term, it really takes away from us in the long term. Because even today, our river has really, really decreased in size. And anyone who looked at the river back then and now will see that. And it's just like a big change. It's not like, oh, it might have gotten a little lower. It's a really major change. And we understand that, like, everybody needs to get what they need to get, and even if it means by sometimes doing things that are beneficial to yourself but non-beneficial to others, this is just one of those matters to where the person who's making the bad choice, that's a worse choice for everyone else, and they need to realize that.
Thank you very much for coming. Laura Benz, followed by James Foley.
Hi, my name is... Hi, my name is Laura Benz. I currently live in McKinleyville, but before that, I lived on the Klamath Basin on the Salmon River. I've only lived out here for 8 years, but it is some of the most beautiful country I've ever seen in my life. Coming from the southeast, where it's all already destroyed, and the water quality is I grew up with brown water, and it would be nice to be able to raise my children getting to eat salmon and sturgeon and steelhead straight out of the beautiful, crystal, clear waters. We really appreciate all the respect given to the tribes and everything. It's really important. It's such a huge, huge way of life for so many people. I really appreciate the dredging being a lot less because I really like to see rivers without deep holes and gristled guys drinking beer and throwing their trash everywhere. I think that's about all I had to say. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. James Foley, followed by Felice Pace.
Members of the board, good afternoon. My name is James Foley. I live in the community of Klamath River, about 30 miles west of Wairika. I am the representative of the New 49ers Prospecting Organization. We have in excess of 2,000 members, actually spread all over the United States. The organization is in possession and owns more than 60 miles of non-contiguous claims on the Klamath River and its tributaries. I am also a mining representative for miners statewide, California, other states included, but we're talking about California here. I am also the suction dredge mining representative for the Upper Mid Klamath Watershed Council. I'd like to commend the staff of the water boards for their diligence and hard work, for all the time that they've put into this. I said I would like to. I didn't say I would. You can make that determination by the time I'm done. Diligence and well-meaning are not substitutes for doing things the right way. I believe that Water Boards has done things the wrong way with regards to this TMDL plan, and I speak solely in reference to the thermal refugia and the part that pertains to suction dredge mining. I've asked at the various scoping meetings that led up to this meeting if the water boards would please get a legal opinion from the Attorney General of the state of California on their authority to regulate mining. I well recognize the board's authority to regulate water and water quality. It goes without saying. But here, when you enter into this realm, you enter into the realm of regulating mining. Under House Resolution 365, which is commonly known as the Mineral Estate Grant, it has granted the right to free and open access to every American citizen that intends to go out there and locate a mining claim. At the time that you do that or I do that, that land that is on the federal public domain is severed from public ownership, from federal ownership, and becomes your or my private property. So when Water Board says that they don't think that these regulations that they are proposing are a taking, when it comes to private property and it prohibits me from mining my private property, it is a taking. Well, now, water boards can say it isn't, but I can say it is, and of course, the law will decide it in the end. It'll probably end up in court. I would like to make a formal request of this board to ask the Attorney General for a formal opinion of whether the Water Boards has the authority to regulate mining on the federal domain. Water Board's draft TMDL is rife with unscientific fears of possible harm where none has been proven. I've asked before this agency and I've asked before other agencies, if you're going to regulate suction dredge mining on the premise of harm, let's see the harm. Somebody please present some harm. The harm is assumed. There is no science, as far as I can see, to what Water Boards has done in identifying harm in the area of thermal refugia. They just say it is thermal refugia. The harm is assumed, but they can't prove it. The majority of suction dredge holes create beneficial areas to rest in for fish that are no different than most natural refugia in the Klamath River Basin. Ideally, thermal refugia would be best, but on the Klamath, thermal refugia is hard to come by. I'll grant you, early in the year, those creeks coming into the Klamath are cold. They're very cold. But we're talking about regulating this thermal refugia in a time of year when it's important for fish. When it's important for fish, those creeks are not running or are running warm. And when they hit the Klamath River, that cool water, and it's not very cool at that time, is dispersed. So we don't have a true thermal refugia. We do have a refugia. I question the need for adapting regulations to prevent suction dredging activity within 500 feet, in some places it's 3,000 feet or more, of many areas where no true thermal refugia are likely to exist. There's one other thing that's not taken into consideration when you draw out your buffer zone. If you have a creek coming in on the west side of the river and you're going to call that a thermal refugia, the other side of the river cannot be included. It is not a thermal refugia. So how about, if you're going to put this buffer in, how about putting it halfway out in the river and leave us alone on the other side of the river where we're not supposedly affecting the thermal refugia? In short, both sides of the river are not thermal refugia. Brett Harvey, a scientist in 1986, found that during low flows in late summer, the fish that they were examining in the riffles moved in and occupied holes created by dredging. He put this in his scientific study. So I say this to show that there is a beneficial aspect of suction dredging in that it will make a haven, a refugia, if you will, in a place where it did not exist before. The whole thrust of the Water Board's TMDL regarding thermal refugia assumes harm, and no harm has been shown to exist, which leads one to question why water boards feels that they must regulate at all. Water boards has also said that their buffer zones and claims do not overlap. I take exception with the map that has been presented to us in the Water Board's presentation. They most certainly do overlap, and that makes it a problem with private property. As far as harm and thermal refugia, it's assumed that we're putting something in the water. But the fact of the matter is that there are no additive effects. There was a study done on the Hubert River that determined that no additive effects were detected on the Hubert River from 40 action dredges on a active dredges on a 6.8-mile stretch. No additive effects. 40 dredges is a lot of dredges in a 6.8-mile stretch of river, and they couldn't detect any additive effects. That is because a suction dredge adds nothing to the river that wasn't there before. We take the gravel off the bottom of the river. It stays in the water, goes up the hose. It passes over a sluice box still in the water. It comes off the back end of the dredge, still in the water. This material never leaves the water. It cannot be classified as a discharge, which is what you folks are going to be asked to determine by EPA later. It is not a discharge. It does never comes out of the water. Nothing is added by a suction dredge. I would submit to this board that suction dredging is the best management practice and should be allowed without restrictive, unnecessary regulations. We had a commenter before I got up that was alluding to this fact that suction dredging is the best practice. And I would affirm to you that it is the most environmentally friendly way of mining that exists today. No other scientific way of mining has been designed that is more environmentally friendly than suction dredge mining. I have pictures that I forgot to bring today of the way it used to be done, where they hydraulic down whole mountainsides to get at the gold. The rivers ran with mud. That doesn't happen today. They used mercury in their sluice boxes in the old days to recover the gold. That doesn't happen today. Miners don't do that. We have advanced recovery methods. Water Boards has said that it is not a taking of private property, but a prohibition is a taking of private property. H.R. 365 is an act of Congress that granted a right, every bit as strong a right as the freedom of speech or the freedom of religion. It is a right. It's not, well, for instance, to clarify where I'm coming from, I can go out and I can buy a permit to catch fish. I can buy a permit to raft. I can buy a permit to hunt. None of those things are rights. They're permissions. But I, as a miner, have a right guaranteed to me by H.R. 365, and the Congress of the United States has granted this to me. Water Board has said that the implementation plan proposes a prohibition on the discharge of excess sediment to address all sediment sources in the Klamath River Basin. The implementation plan also proposes a prohibition on the discharge of waste in and around known thermal refugia. My answer to this is that regulations must be reasonable. And I'm sure you folks know that if regulation is not reasonable as defined by law, then it is a prohibition. This paragraph mentions excess sediment. A suction dredge does not put excess anything in the water. If there's sediment in front of it, it picks it up and it puts it behind it. It's the same sediment. It's not excess. It also mentions what comes off the end of a sluice on a suction dredge is waste. This is an EPA term under the Clean Water Act. They like to classify it as waste. I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that if it is waste when it falls off the end of my sluice box, then it is waste when I pick it up with my nozzle, because it's one and the same, and it never leaves the water. It's not a discharge of waste. The Water Board has said, suction dredging activities and activities that alter the stream bank are identified as having the potential to cause direct impacts to the function of refugia. The potential. That is not science, folks. That's conjecture. That's an, I think it might hurt something. Well, nobody has proven it. I don't think the Water Boards has the science to back up the claim. As far as dredging into the stream bank, for those of you that don't know, I would tell you that it is already illegal. It is against the law. And no suction dredger worth his salt is going to dredge into a stream bank. We don't like to harm anything either. We have to use this water. We're not polluting it. I have to be in this water 5 or 6 days a week, 5 months out of the year. I and other suction dredgers spend more time in the water than anyone else in this state. We want clean water, believe it or not.
Mr. Foley, if I could get you to conclude, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To regulate for potential for harm where no harm has been shown to exist is unjustifiable, and the agencies must be challenged, according to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Pace, followed again by Mr. Pace. We could keep it to one,
I thought
please.
We had two items, but I guess we're talking about them at the same. Good morning. My name is Felice Pace. It's nice to see you today. I represent myself today. And seek to advocate for the river. I want to thank Mr. Morin, did I pronounce that correctly?
Pretty
for
close.
Your standing up against efforts that I believe were aimed to intimidate your staff. And I appreciated your statement this morning, and I think on behalf, you know. Anyway, I appreciate it. I also want to express appreciation for the young people that came here today and for what they represent. I want to start, by showing you an example of what we're faced with and have been faced with in this basin that this TMDL needs to be able to address, and which I'm afraid, even though I want to recognize all the good work of the staff, and there's many good aspects to this TMDL, I'm afraid it won't get the job done anytime soon or in time. I'm going to pass these around to you. I printed them out this morning. This stuff's expensive to print, you know, and stuff, but these are pictures that I've taken. And this is a site in the Scott River Valley. And what you see here is Johnson and Crystal Creek coming into Patterson Creek. And when you get this, you'll see that Patterson Creek is clear, but Johnson and Crystal Creek are discolored, dark brown. And that I've been complaining about this site and seeking to get it fixed for about almost a decade now. Kat is very familiar with my complaints on this site. And it's still, right now I could take you out there today. It's doing this because it's springtime. And it's all that's upstream is cattle and cows. And this is the kind of situation. There's Johnson Creek with the cows sitting there, and they have full access to the stream. Full access to the stream. These streams, of course, are dewatered. And then these are the cow pies in the bed of Patterson Creek, just below the site I showed you in the first picture. When the water comes back in the fall after the diversions are shut off and the rains come and recharge the aquifer, then all this is mobilized and delivered to the Scott Canyon and thence to the Klamath River. And this is a scene in wintertime, and all those cows, there's all black cows in the back, cattle, and one in the stream. They all have access. I'm going to pass these around to you. You know, they all have access to the stream. And this cattle, this fence here is a cattle exclusion fence, but they get taken down. So we've fenced, they've washed out, and so we fenced some of these parts of the river three times. This is near the river. This is Patterson Creek. It goes in a little further down. But we don't have exclusion, okay? We don't have exclusion. So this is the kind of situation that we need to be able to address. And the best way to address this is a prohibition, and I'll get to that in a minute. So-called action plan really should be called not an inaction plan, but a maybe future action plan sometime in the future, because everything is deferred. You know, like PacifiCorps, you know, they can submit a proposed implementation plan sometime in the future. We got to work to develop things. I'm reading from, you know, from the thing you're going to adopt. We can study and we can have more stakeholder groups. We've had all these stakeholders groups. These are inaction groups. When you have a stakeholder group now, it's an inaction group. It's designed to delay action. And that's what's happened before with stakeholder groups, and I would predict that's what I expect to happen in the future, more delay. We know what we need to do to clean up the ag pollution. We don't have to wait 2 years and hold people's hands again. We've been holding their hands for 30 years and saying, please, it's time to put in a prohibition. Do you know, okay, failure, why, do you know how much waste a cow produces in a day? Do you know how much time a cow will spend in water if it's allowed access? These are well-researched issues, okay, well-researched issues in the literature, and there's no need for another stakeholder group to figure out where our problems are. As I said, in Siskiyou County, for example, we have 100,000, roughly 100,000 cattle and 50,000 people. The 50,000 people have restrictions on what they have to do with their waste. They need an approved on-site system or else they need to be part of a municipal system. The cows, open range, they can defecate any place they want, and it's not against the law. You need to make it against the law. The cows and the cattle are more free than the people in Siskiyou County. Let's get things into perspective. On the dams, what has happened here is your staff has been ordered from above to not put anything for the dams, really anything for the dams, not anything that you have control over into this action plan, and instead to substitute something that was negotiated in West Virginia. Here's the article on it. It's back there. You can pick up one on the back. It was negotiated in West Virginia not by a bunch of stakeholders, but by the two governors, the president of PacifiCorps and the secretary of Interior. This is from the Durango Herald, because even though it was written by AP guy out of Medford, nobody around here would print it because it says the emperor has no clothes. You get the picture? So instead of submit a proposed implementation plan for coming into compliance with the TMDL, that is struck out in the document you're considering. And it says submit a proposed implementation plan that incorporates timelines and contingencies pursuant to the KHSA, which your staff had nothing to say about, and no participation. It says it in your documents, many places that you didn't have access to that process. So you've been ordered to adopt this instead of the paragraph that is struck out here. And you need to stand up to the governor and take the muzzles off your staff and, you know, adopt something that fulfills your responsibility, because if not, you know, we'll try to... Well, even though some of these groups that used to sue you and have been bought off, we'll find some others someplace to challenge the governor here if you won't stand up for this river. Because this company shouldn't get a free ride compared to everybody else. They should have to comply. The earliest possible time the dam decommissioning can begin, and that the dams would be relicensed in terms of going through the regular process and court challenges and all that, the earliest possible time is 2020. 10 years. For 10 years, PacifiCorps has said, oh, we'll throw some money out there and do some offsets. Where is the authority? I want to know from the staff and from your lawyers, where is the authority to use offsets to comply with the Clean Water Act? Where is it in the law? I don't see it in the law, so you tell me where it is. And you should ask that question, Okay? Is it legal to use these offsets instead of addressing the problems in these reservoirs to actually use offsets? I don't see where it's legal. So, you know, you may be making yourself vulnerable. Keno, we're inadequate with Keno. We're going to study it some more. We're going to do some planning. You know, how much planning do we have to do? The single best thing we could do for water quality in this basin is to restore Lower Klamath Lake. We know what to do it. Also, you're inadequate. Your TMDL is inadequate because it does not identify in the Lost River one as well that there's a need for an NPDES permit. There are pumps owned by the Bureau of Reclamation operated by Tule Lake Irrigation District that move water from the Lost River Basin and pump it into the Klamath River Basin. Under Supreme Court decisions, that requires an NPDES permit. You have a responsibility to make it comply. You know, this theme of putting things off to the future, we have these, we do have some prohibitions on discharges in there. I appreciate that. That's good. We need a specific prohibition for animal waste, livestock waste. But when it comes to industrial forestry, they get guidance. They don't get prohibitions. And what's not addressed here, and Gary's comment for, whoever Gary was commenting for back here, I guess Green Diamond, really goes to this. Because what is not adequately addressed is two things, road maintenance and the other, but the main thing is mass wasting. And most of the sediment delivered in the Klamath Mountains comes from mass landslides, old earth flows that are mobilized. And see, I've dealt with this in the THPs. They want to call these uncontrollable things, and then you get doing scientists and stuff like that. But, you know, I can take you out on the ground and show you where you put the road up above or you logged up above and it was unstable down below, the big landslide can happen. But so I think really we need to make sure we do by leaving in excess, not controllable, but excess. Sediment, and we need to not give guidance, we need to give prohibitions. The time for guidance, we've been doing this forever and ever. Okay, you know, and I heard a lot about flexibility. I do need to back up Siskiyou County in terms of this, the process that has to do with the dams, and I've already dealt with that, but I do agree with Siskiyou County. They're not here to hear it. They'd be falling out of their chairs. I reemphasize the, I'm glad I got something out of somebody, the refugia, good deal, good work done collaboratively on that. And in that regard, I just want to say that what we're dealing up there with this suction dredging is not mining, it's recreation. And it should be dealt with as recreation. There's not one of these guys that's making a living out here. We know miners and we defended miners who make a living on the land. These guys aren't the ones. Okay, I'm going to wrap up. I want to give you these pictures to pass around.
You can give it to us when you finish if you like. Or
okay.
Now it's fine.
You can hold on to those and somebody can give the staff afterwards. You know, we're not just dealing with threatened and endangered species here. You heard about some of that from Erica Terrence. But we are really and truly dealing with threatened and endangered lifeways and cultures. And we need to respect that, all of them, the agricultural culture, the indigenous culture, the real mining culture, even recreation culture we need to offer some respect to. But, you know, we can't afford to take as much time as there is here to defer these things, the agricultural one for 2 years. So I beg of you to put some time, some quicker time frames on that. And oh, by the way, there's the timeline. Yeah. So just some quicker timelines for the agricultural waiver, as was talked about, because, I mean, we can have stakeholders there, but we don't have to take 2 years to do what we know needs to be done. Thank you. Answer any questions if there are any.
So Chris Kornbach, followed by Dana Rose.
Okay, I was like, hey. Good afternoon, Chairman Hales, member of the board, members of the board. I'm Chris Kornbach. I'm with Timber Products Company. We manage approximately 40,000 acres of timberland, mostly in the upper reaches of the Klamath River. I have submitted comments on both of the 2009 versions, written as well as oral comments, and I do want to commend the staff in general for being responsive to my comments. Yeah, I do have a couple of what I believe are minor comment or suggestions for the board to consider. Minor edits that I think will help minimize potential for confusion as the implementation plan is put forward, should it get adopted. My first minor edit would be on page 6-57. Kind of in the middle of the page, it's the sentence that starts with an example. It says an example of a circumstance. And goes on, it talks about a class 2 small stream. That should be standard, just for the record. And that's a minor edit. I have another concern with that sentence that says, see, the previous two or three sentences talk about the ASP rules and the forest practice rules. In most cases, are going to be adequate to protect for water quality. My concern with that sentence that starts with an example is it says where the ASP rules are insufficient in a class 2S or class 2 small, which should be standard. That sentence seems to be inconsistent with the previous three and the rest of the TMDL implementation plan, which strongly implies that the forest practice rules are adequate. So one idea would be to strike the whole sentence. It doesn't really bring a lot to the table. It's an example, doesn't have to be there. Another idea would be to change, to make it consistent with the rest of the document and the previous sentences would be to change that R to maybe, maybe insufficient. And I think that's a minor edit. The second issue I wanted to raise was it's on the section of the document that starts on page 6-58. And then goes to 6-59, and that's the implementation measure that timber landowners are responsible for. And I do see that staff has edited and added timber harvest review process. That was an edit that I had requested. But another edit I had requested was for some substantiation of in those cases where staff believes that the forest practice rules aren't adequate for a particular site. I had asked that there be some level of substantiation, and in the response to public comment, staff committed to providing, they didn't use the term substantiation, but they committed to providing support, written support, for any instance where the forest practice rules were gonna need to be augmented by one of their recommendations. But my suggested edit would, if we could put that right in the implementation plan, that commitment by staff, instead of having it hidden on page 950 of the public review response, I think that would make for a lot better implementation of the plan. So those are the two two main comments I had as far as edits, and I did want to add I do share Mr. Chapman's concern with regard to the Butte Valley Hydrologic Unit. I see additional language that's been added in the March 2010 version that talks about requiring foresters to justify proposals for in light of the water quality objective. Well, the Butte Valley was never even analyzed as part of the THP, as part of the TMDL, I'm sorry. So it seems a little awkward to have additional mitigation requirements on an area that was never even analyzed as part of the TMDL. And that's really the one direct additional mitigation that I could see. So I'd like to ask for the board to consider the elimination of any additional mitigations for the Butte Valley Hydrologic Unit, given that it was not analyzed as part of the TMDL, which the TMDL so states. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Dana Rose, followed by Denver Nelson.
Hi, I'm Dana Rose from Hoopaw. I'm with the Climate Justice Coalition, and I had a couple things to say today. Thank you guys for listening to us and taking everything into consideration. I want to touch on a Scott and Shasta, the TMDL there, not working. We would like to see more monitoring, stronger TMDLs for that area. Another thing on the mining, I wanted to know how you get your permit to mine in the state of California, because 3 out of 4 miners that I've talked to are not California residents. I'd also like to get, 6.5.4.5 struck from the mining issue. I don't know what else to say. I hope you guys can hurry up the process, because we don't have a lot of time. The river is dying. I'm sure you guys are tired of listening to all this over and over, because it's the same thing over and over. I'm even starting to recognize people. So thank you for your time, and good luck.
Thanks, Dan. Denver Nelson, followed by Vivian Helliwell.
Hello. My name's Denver Nelson. I live in Eureka, and I have some property up on the Klamath. The first thing I'd like to do is point out that the Lost River does not flow into the Klamath, as your staff said. The reason I know that is because I'm quite elderly, and I've been coming to these sessions and commenting on them for a long time. The Lost River starts in Clear Lake, and it flows around and dumps into Tule Lake. And the Bureau of Reclamation wanted to build a new dam on Lost River a long time ago, and so I commented on it because it looked to me like, with all of the canals and what have you, that the river actually flowed into the Klamath River. So I said to him, you should say that this is the first branch of the Klamath River and act accordingly. And the Bureau of Reclamation replied to my comment and said I was an idiot and that I didn't know the course of the Lost River. So if you have to deal with the Klamath River or the Lost River from now on, you should, and the Bureau of Reclamation, you should keep that in mind. The second thing is that as I say, I've been dealing with these Klamath issues for a long time, but interested in them. I have a nice place up on the Klamath River. I go up there to go fishing and swimming. I haven't been up there for 2 years, and the reason I haven't been there is because there's so much sediment, gravel in the river, that I can't get my boat up there most of the year. And if I do get up there, my dog used to like to swim in the river. I'm afraid my dog is going to die from swimming in the river because the river is so contaminated, and I won't let my grandchildren swim in the river anymore for the same reason. So I first got involved in TMDLs because I owned a ranch on the Auger Van Dusen watershed, and that was one of the first sediment TMDLs that was done. And the ranchers, of course, when they found out that there was going to be a TMDL, were all up in arms because they thought that regulators were going to screw everything up. And so what happened was that we all got together as a group. Turns out that there was a guy named Kelsey who wrote a PhD thesis on the sediment in the Van Dusen River. It started in 1950. And it's an excellent TMDL. And so there was a source analysis, and there was an analysis of where the sediment came from, how much was man-made, how much was natural, and out of that then the ranchers got together and had spent lots and lots of money taking out roads and improving the watershed. from that start then, other TMDLs, sediment TMDLs were done on North Coast rivers, and they kind of went downhill. They didn't do a careful analysis and sort of used the source data from that and also from Redwood Creek and applied it to other ones. So it really isn't, you really can't test whether anything you did improves the sediment. So why am I talking about sediment? Well, I figured that of all the rivers on the North Coast, there certainly would be a sediment TMDL for the Klamath, because if you drive up the Klamath, there is more sediment in the Klamath River than there is in every other river combined between here and San Francisco. And to my amazement, the sediment, the Klamath had not been listed as impaired for sediment, which really bothered me. So I started raising hell about it, and I eventually ended up going to the State Water Board, and there were other people that felt the same way. Anyway, the State Water Board listed the Klamath as sediment impaired, and there's supposed to be a TMDL on it. I thought that this TMDL that we're talking about now had something to do with sediment, but it doesn't. And I think it's sort of like the elephant in the room. If you don't fix the sediment impairment of the Klamath River, you're not going to be able to fix the water temperature or the biologic problems that have that are on the river, because the gravel fills up the river, makes it hot. When it gets hot, things grow in it, and fish can't get up the river. So you can do all these other things, and if you don't fix the sediment, then what's being done in this current TMDL, I don't think is going to be of much benefit to anybody. So I asked some of the staff if they were working on the Klamath sediment TMDL, and I kind of got blank stares from them. I hope that this TMDL in the Klamath is not the end of doing TMDLs on the Klamath. Thank you.
Thank you. Vivian Hellerwell. That is also the last speaker card that I have. If there are others that wish to speak, I urge you to fill one out, please.
Hi, I'm Vivian Hellerwell, Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations and Institute for Fisheries Resources. We've submitted substantial comments in writing early on, and we hope that the board will adopt the TMDL and the oxygen objectives. Our fishermen locally here are out crabbing today. There's a little window of weather. I see it's quite windy this afternoon, but they got out in the morning. And so we also had to send people to the marine parks meetings and protected poaching areas, as they're called by the Wardens Association. I don't have a lot to add today in terms of specific comments, but I do want to support the comments of Susan Correa and of Erica Terrence, and the comments that Felice made about keeping the cows out of the creek is important. In the Garcia River, we had a legally defensible way of for the landowners to make ranch plans that would protect their privacy while making a plan to reduce sediment off their properties. And I'm disappointed to see that that's not incorporated in this TMDL. It's 2 years is a long time of interim time between now and the ag waivers, and I would like to see that done a lot sooner. We've had decades of voluntary stewardship and cooperation and negotiation and stakeholder groups, and it's time to get this thing moving for the fish. We have our membership is in a dozen port associations up and down the coast. We all rely on the salmon for the livelihoods in our communities, economics. Those of us who live far from the Klamath, as far as Morro Bay and up into Oregon, rely on Klamath fish. Now, we know we also have big problems right now in the Sacramento with various species all crashing at once. But we had good and even record returns of coho in Oregon and Washington and steelhead, and that indicates good ocean conditions. And so we really need to move quickly and make sure that the Klamath prohibitions and restoration are done as quickly as possible for these fish. So we've had 2 years of 100% unemployment in salmon fishing commercial in the ocean. And our young people go to Alaska to fish for salmon. They don't stay here in California. There are still people here who would like to fish salmon. My husband has a boat. He's just fished his 40th crab season. There are no other fisheries to move into for a fisherman because they're all well managed and protective of the various stocks. So mostly limited entry fisheries. And I especially want to thank the staff for all the hard work you've done through these years putting together the TMDL. I know it was a monumental project. We really appreciate it. We hope you will adopt it soon. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, do I have any other speakers? All right.